Hello and welcome to Faith Conversations. My name is Mel Lorenz, and I'm really glad you decided to listen today. Remember that anytime that you want, you can come back and listen to past Faith Conversations. Just go to the website, thebrooknetwork.org, where we have Faith Conversations and a lot of other resources for you. We get to talk to interesting people from around the world, authors, leaders, and today my guest is Chris C., who is a church planter, a pastor, a speaker, and he's written several books, the most recent of which we will talk about today, is called The Gospel According to Jesus, A Faith That Restores All Things. Chris, thank you for talking to us today.
You guys are good friends over there. We're always delighted to get to visit a bit.
That's great. Your books in the past, Chris, have kind of dealt with where Christian faith intersects with pop culture. Are you going a different direction with this book, or why did you want to write this one?
You know, hopefully I'm getting to the root of why the other books have such meaning to me. I mean, one of the things I enjoy, I know, Mel, you guys do a lot of this, is just getting to see how God's at work in so many different places. I can't help but go to a movie or go to an art gallery, and you just begin to see things that are so absolutely beautiful that they speak of who God is and what it means to really have meaning in this life. And yeah, I find it in strange places. So I find it in shows like The Sopranos. So wrote a book about the gospel according to Tony Soprano and the recent ABC hit show Lost. But I find that when we participate in good art, we get to see a lot of God's truth play out in a way that's really accessible for all of us. And this is really, in some ways, getting at how I think many, and your listeners probably fit in this category, there's a lot of people that have gone, I have decided Christianity's irrelevant for these reasons. And what I've come to find out is that people both inside the church that maybe haven't pushed it aside but have been confused about it, and those on the outside have rejected Christianity for things that Christianity really isn't even about. And so we want to take the time to unpack those and say, what is this all really supposed to mean? And maybe we're missing some of the key points along the way.
Well, you are tackling some misunderstandings about Christian faith and misunderstandings that can lead to significant aberrations and a gospel that is pretty vacuous. You say in the book, is it possible that we've ignored Jesus, our wild messianic king, and chosen to recreate him in the image of the Pharisees themselves? What's the answer to your own question?
We found this is where a lot of people are. And I think even if you just ask people on the streets what they believe Christianity is about, or in our case, what we asked people was, what do you believe this word used so many times in the scriptures that we translate from diakosune, we translate as righteousness from the Greek. What do people believe that it means? And what we found was that most people believe it means some kind of morality or personal piety, that it was a life that was centered around keeping certain rules. The only time Jesus uses it in this way is when he refers to the Pharisees. He talks about the righteousness of the Pharisees. But in more general terms, he talks about righteousness as something that's restoring everything, taking what's broken and making it whole. And that's what the resurrection was about stepping into the place in our lives that, yes, we needed to receive Jesus to accept his grace for our own sins. But he's also Jesus at work healing the environment and the water crisis and all of these things that are deeply broken in the earth. And that's the great news, is the church gets to be a part of that restorative work. And my experience is that's where we come alive. I talk a lot in the book about our journey with a family in our church that ended up on Extreme Makeover Home Edition. You know, if anybody that's ever watched this show, sometimes it feels more like church than church does. You know, by the end of it, you just feel like this is the right thing to do. And we're made to help restore what's broken. That's part of the reason shows like that connect so deeply with us.
So did you find, Chris, either in the study or in just your experience as a pastor, that this whole idea of righteousness or the misunderstanding of righteousness is really a fork in the road for people, whether they understand it rightly or not?
Yeah, I think it is. And it was a fork in the road for me in many ways. If I hadn't had the opportunity to get pointed towards some real faith, I think I'd be at a different place in my journey. I recall in the book, and I remember being a kid in youth group, and one week we had somebody come in and just give, it was like an hour-long talk about not doing drugs. You know, it's just all about, we don't want our kids doing drugs. But the truth is, if we focus on the rules, we just keep telling them not to do drugs. It was a crazy thing that happened that week. After an hour-long talk about not doing drugs, people left that weren't thinking about doing drugs, and they actually wanted to do drugs. Paul talks about this in Romans. The rules have the tendency to bring out the worst in us. The opposite is true when we focus on Jesus and on his grace and what he's up to in the world. The last thing we want to do is go waste ourselves away abusing illicit drugs. But if you focus on the rules, and this is true for all of us as parents, if that becomes the primary focus, we'll bring out the worst in our kids and church members and the like. And so when we come to that place, we realize the main thing Jesus wants from me is not that I keep these rules that somehow have been listed and that half the time aren't even in the Bible, but really he wants my heart. And when I begin to worship Jesus and really appreciate what God has done for me, it leads me to a much more beautiful and whole life.
How do you approach people, Chris, as a pastor and a spiritual leader? You got some people, they're pretty self-righteous. They think that they're too good to need, or they're not bad enough to really need God. And then at the same time, in the same room, you know you're looking into the faces of people who don't believe that they deserve God. What do you do with that incredible divide in the human psyche?
My experience, it is hard to deal with, I think, for those of us as pastors. And the best thing we can do is those that lead in faith, whether you're a Sunday school teacher or a teacher in the schools or a pastor, is to give people moments of self-reflection where when I explain how I see my own sin, how in moments I snap at my wife and I'm off course. I come back from a trip and I'm not in a good place. And people will begin to hear those stories and say, you know, that's me too. I'm in that place too. I didn't realize how far I drift. And in those self-deprecating moments, we invite people into self-reflection. And the truth is, people on both sides are running from moments of self-reflection. Blaise Pascal says, we're just looking constantly for the next diversion so that we don't have to look at ourselves. And if we stop and we get to look at ourselves in a community where people aren't self-righteous and they don't look down on us because we're broken, and that's been my experience. We have people at our church, we tell our life stories as a part of starting a new small group, and everybody's always afraid to share their whole story because we all have places of great failures, right? They're afraid people are going to reject them. And quite the opposite happens. It's like people embrace that failure in people because they go, I see it in me too. And it humbles everybody together. And that's what a Christian community should look like. And I know at Elmbrook and so many other places across the country, we get to see that beauty so often. And it's great when people connect with it.
Tell us about the study that you referred to, the Barna study. What were you looking at there, and how does that figure into what you're writing here?
Well, we were primarily looking at how people view or understand the word righteousness. I've been a part of a Bible translation project called The Voice for several years, and what we realized is we could translate a word accurately according to the dictionary, but if people thought the word meant something different, then it wouldn't be good. And what we found out was that most people didn't understand righteousness at all. In fact, just right off the bat, only 45% of people that went to church every week even would say they're very familiar with the term. This is a term used over 100 times in the New Testament. It's the most common and important word, arguably, in Romans. And yet, we really don't understand it. And most folks really associated it with keeping the rules. And so what we found is that the climax of the Sermon on the Mount, this is what Jesus ends with, right, is that we're supposed to seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And if you think what we're chasing after is a life about keeping the rules versus joining Jesus and bringing salvation not only to us but to all of creation, then we'll miss it and we'll get off track. And so the book is really about unpacking those passages and helping people re-examine what true Christianity in the words of both Paul and Jesus. And I'd say we've tried to make them different, and they're very much talking about the same gospel, what it really means.
You're listening to Faith Conversations. Today, my guest is Chris See, who is a pastor, a church planter, and the author of the most recent book, The Gospel According to Jesus, A Faith That Restores All Things. So let's jump on the main part of your title, Chris. What does Jesus say the gospel is?
Well, maybe my favorite chapter in the book is that chapter, What is the Gospel? And we ask people to lay it out. And I think for all Christians, we should really think through it so that when we're asked, we can be able to say, hey, this is my definition of the gospel. This is what I think it means. I encourage people to read Romans 1. I think Paul gives us a very strong definition there, and I go through about 10 of them in that chapter. For me, I would say that the gospel is the good news that God is calling out all people to be redeemed by the power residing in the life, death, and ultimate resurrection of Jesus. And the called out ones are rescued from a life of slavery, sin, and failure to become emissaries in a new kingdom. And that kingdom is joining in the redemption of the entire creation. So I get to see in our definitions of the gospel, I hope that what we always see is a focus on Christ, a focus on his life, his death, and its redeeming power. So however you actually lay it out, hopefully that's at the very heart of it.
So you say the gospel is a call. What is it that God is calling us to do? If it's not to jump through the hoops and follow the rule book, what is the summons to?
Great question. It's relationship. Ultimately, this is God's journey, is that we would be joined in relationship. It's the most beautiful thing as we begin to understand the scriptures and our God. As we understand sin, that sin's not really a violation of these abstract rules. It's a violation of relationship. In the same way that when I sin against my wife, it's about really breaking our trust and relationship. And what God has intended us for is to be joined together. And when we begin to get that sense, like, the love of God is so strong that he wants to be united with us. And so when we are united in that love of God, we also get to join with God in his work in the world. And that always must sound like and be truly good news. And the truth is, religion isn't good news. I think it's one of the reasons people struggle inviting friends to church or telling people about faith, because if you're a part of religion, you don't really want to bring people along for that. When you're a part of true Christian salvation that comes to us freely, that abounds in grace, it says we've been forgiven, and so we have to forgive everybody. We don't get to hold a grudge against anyone because we know that we've failed. And we live into the scriptures that teach us clearly we're to be a feasting and a celebrating and a loving people. When you're a part of that kind of community, you want to bring people along. You want to invite people into that kind of faith and in that kind of life.
This is the end of part one of a two-part interview.